morning, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, December 4th, 2008. It's now about 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution, we can start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. Again, I need to apologize. I'm still getting over a debilitating throat infection, and I think it's a little bit better now. So I'll try to do the best I can for the next half hour. You can certainly help me and make this program a lot more interesting if you would call in 646-652-4620 during our live broadcast. 646-652-4620. We have 5 open lines. Love to hear from you. Any comment is welcome, even if it's off the subject that we're discussing this morning. Also, you can also send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. And we will respond to you over the air but we will respond to you one way, shape, or form. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. He discusses economic issues, how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. This program is now available on Sunday evenings, also through Restore the Republic Radio. That's rtrradio.com. We appreciate their commitment to our program and encourage you to visit their website, rtrradio.com, for an entire listing of informative programs. Lastly, I'd like to also remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good morning, everyone. For those of you listening, I hope you can bear with me this morning. My voice is a little stronger, and hopefully this bacterial infection that's all I have, will subside by Sunday evening. And I will try to make it through this next 30 minutes here. This morning, I'd like to discuss that age-old adage, what's good for General Motors is good for the country. You know, we almost grew up with that saying, and I often thought, have we ever given that any thought? What do they really mean by that? What's good for General Motors is good for the country. Now, I think euphemistically, they just meant that as General Motors goes, so goes the nation. But when you really think about it, General Motors did a lot of stupid things, a lot of things that were wrong. And when it comes to employer-employee relationships, they didn't do a very good job. So obviously we're saying that if you treat your employees in a manner which they feel so compelled to join a strong union, where they will not do anything that the company suggests that they do unless the union approves it, that cannot possibly be good for the country. Have we ever thought of that? Now, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently regarding a lot of talk. That's all they talk about, whether or not General Motors will in fact be given the amount of money required for them to stay in business. Now, I've made my position clear here. General Motors should go bankrupt. Now, I know that sounds very cruel and harsh, especially those people who work for General Motors. But I don't think it's going to affect the workers at all, because eventually the workers will, in fact, lose their jobs. Excuse me. Pardon me, I'm sorry. Now, let's go back and let's role play a little bit. What has happened with General Motors? and forward on all the rest of them. Let's look back. If we take a car like a Toyota, we see that there's a Toyota Tercel, a Toyota Corolla, a Toyota Camry, and some of these cars have been around for the past 40, 50 years. If we go to Honda, we find the same thing. We find the Honda Civic, the Honda Accord, and others been around for 30, 40 years. And that was the consistency. Look at the Volkswagen. Volkswagen brought back the Volkswagen Beetle. Because there is something to be said, excuse me, I'm sniffling here, something to be said for consistency. If I mention to somebody Lexus, immediately comes to mind is a particular type of car. It's a higher end car, very, very high quality, very low maintenance records, a luxury car, and basically it gets very favorable ratings from Consumer Reports and every other reporting agency. So you get this very favorable impression. I mean, you know what it is. It's like you're familiar with it. The same thing if I said Toyota Tercel. You know, well, that's a small car, and a Honda Civic, small car, top rated. You know exactly what it is when you're buying it. For some reason, both General Motors and Ford, over the past 30 years, decided that they're going to dump the names of all of their cars and then come out with new names every other year. Now, if I mention to people Ford Focus, I bet you a lot of people, I know I don't know what that is. I have no idea. Now, if you said Chevy Camaro, I know what it is, but they discontinued that car, and they just brought it back, but priced it in a way that only mere mortals could not afford it. In other words, they don't have product identification anymore. My point is this, is that General Motors has made strategically very, very poor decisions. Now, put yourself in the boardroom or in the decision, the highest level of General Motors or Chevy or one of the divisions, and they're talking about how they're going to run the company. Now, these people are making six-figure and seven-figure incomes. They've been in the auto industry all their lives. They know who their competitors are. They know exactly what Toyota, Honda, Hyundai, Kia, every other competitor is doing. And they know what is successful. And what do? They do those things, the antithesis of what the successful auto companies do. And then, as a result, they lose market share and they want the taxpayer to bail them out. I say, no, I'm sorry. Now, this morning on CNBC News, a guy made a very good important statement. He said this. He said, you cannot go from a market economy to a political economy. A political economy is one in which, I'm sorry, I'd like to give credit to the fellow, but I just don't remember his name. But I apologize for that. But it's not original. Once you have a political economy, then you have politicians picking and choosing which companies stay in business. Now just think of that for a second. Do you want the government to determine who stays in business and who does not? Why is it so critical that General Motors stay in business, but yet an employer that has three employees that provides a product or a service that's necessary in their community, why aren't they just as important? Just because they're smaller. It's this this notion of too big to fail. Well, if it's too big to fail, it is too big to manage. We won't know where the money goes. We won't know how the money is spent. And it most likely will be squandered. Let's get back to General Motors. So here we are in the boardroom making these decisions. Remember when the Chevy Vega came out? Was it 30-some-odd years ago, 40 years ago? It came out only after the Honda Civic hit the streets, the Volkswagen Beetle was on the streets, the Toyota Tercel was on the streets. These small cars that people really liked, and only a small segment of the population at the time liked them, but they took hold, people liked them, because they were quality automobiles. and General Motors and Ford and Chrysler were Johnny-come-latelys. Now, this is the way the General Motors has been operating, as a Johnny-come-lately. Then when they make a car that people want, they make a limited production at a high price, and it becomes a collector's item. Well, I say General Motors be damned. I'll give you another example. I think it was two years ago, Chrysler came out with the Hemi. Now, I'm from the muscle car era. The muscle car era, that means the cars were tremendously powerful. And of course, one of my favorite cars was the Plymouth and Dodge Hemi. They had hemispherical heads, very heavy engine, capable of extremely high horsepower, and if they were putting special carburetors and blowers on them, they produced well over 1,000 horsepower. Phenomenal engines, very efficient. Well, when the muscle car era ended, so did the Hemi. Well, it came back, I think, 2 years ago, and when I heard that, I ran over to the Chrysler dealership, the Dodge dealership, actually, in downtown Tulsa, walked in. I said, I'd like to see your Hemi. And now, right next to the salesman, there was a four-door sedan. It was tan. It looked like a type of car that, the little old lady drives to church on Sunday. Now, the Hemis were always relegated to two-door hardtops. That means they had the post, on the side, the windows. It wasn't a hardtop. It was a sedan. I'm sorry, two-door sedan, not a hardtop. And it was usually in the lightest car, and you were able to get it with the least amount of options. So basically, you had a racing engine. You can take it right from the showroom floor right to the drag strip. And this is what I was looking for. Now, I wasn't going to drag it. I was just going to buy one. I was going to buy one in the very, very cheapest model. The sort of like the Bel Air. I mean, the Belvedere, the Plymouth Belvedere at the time. And just have all engine and basically no car. Well, the salesman tells me, he goes, here it is. And I looked, I said, no, I'm looking for the Hemi. He says, here it is. I said, that's a four-door sedan. It's a family car. I'm looking for the Hemi. He says, that's all it comes in. Now, I don't think it was much of a resounding success. Because everybody, and I go back to the image when I say, a Volkswagen Beetle, or I say Toyota Corolla, or I say Honda Civic, Honda Accord, people have an image of what that is. I had an image of what a Chrysler Hemi was. And I'm looking for this two-door sedan, very plain, five or six-speed transmission, 456 gears in the rear, all engine. I don't even want a radio in the stupid thing. But that's the way muscle cars were built. And I went there, and he shows me this four-door sedan. It comes with air conditioning, all the bells and whistles. Quite frankly, it was a very unattractive car, and it was very expensive. And I looked at him, and I said, no one's going to buy this. Guess what, folks? I was right. I mean, not that I know anything about the car industry, but why would someone who buys a four-door sedan that's just used to drive around in town want to buy a car that has an extra heavy, gigantic engine in it, a Hemi engine in it, that gets probably less gas mileage than a regular car? I mean, it just made no sense. I mean, made absolutely no sense. And I walked out totally distraught. Now, now let me fast forward. About 2 months ago, I was riding my motorcycle over to Starbucks for my cup of coffee. And I passed by a car that looked like it was a muscle car from the 1970s. But it was brand new. I mean, brand spanking new. And it had Hemi on it and a whole bit. And I looked at it and I said, well, it's not a 70s car. It looks newer, but it's a Hemi. It was gorgeous. So I called my son, who's a real car connoisseur. He says, oh, yes, they came out with a high-performance Hemi, 426, 420 horsepower, conservatively rated, in a two-door sedan, and it's a real racing car. So I went over to the car dealership again, they had moved to South Tulsa, and I go over there, and I say, I want to see this. They say, well, we don't have any. You'll have to put your name on a waiting list. Now, folks, I had a problem with both of those. Now, that was just two examples, and I'm sure everyone has their own example. And I said, well, I want to know what the price would be, you know, if I just wanted the Hemi engine, you know, six-speed transmission, low gear ratios, you know, in orange, you know, in the Challenger orange. And he says, I'm sorry, you can't order it that way. You have to order electric locks, air conditioning. You know, in other words, it was a luxury sports car. And I thought to myself, I said, that makes no sense. And he said, you'll probably wind up paying $10,000 over sticker if your name is selected on the waiting list. So, you know, in my mind, you know, I said to him, you know, my mind, I said, forget that fella. And I walked out. Now, mind you, in both cases, they didn't ask me to come into the dealership. I voluntarily went there. And in both cases, they didn't give me what I expected. Now, let me go back to the cars that I was talking about originally. Chevy had a car that was a mainstay. It was a Camaro. By the way, my favorite Chevy of all times is the Chevy Chevelle. I love the Chevelle. I just absolutely love that car. And someday, if I ever buy an old car, you know, with a big engine in it, it'll be a Chevy Chevelle. Don't know why, but I just love that car. And most models, by the way. Now, they did away with most of those cars. And now they have names that, you know, I don't identify with. No one identifies with. People with disposable income cannot identify with American cars anymore. But you know what we identify with? We identify with foreign cars. Oh, by the way, I'm well past my station identification. And I apologize. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We are live for the next 12 minutes. And our caller number is 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. Please, we have 5 open lines. I know it's early in the morning. You would give my voice a break if you called in. Thank you. Now, being a libertarian, I don't want the government to determine which cars are made. The American car manufacturers screw that up well enough themselves, and as a result, they're going under. What I object to is if the American the government bails out failed automotive companies, they'll be doing that at the expense, number one, of the taxpayer, and number two, at the expense of those manufacturers who built cars that people wanted. And that would be Toyota, Honda, Hyundai, Kia, and the rest of them. Now, if I said Mazda is another one of my favorite cars, Mazda and the Mitsubishi. If I said Honda, Mazda, Miata, everyone would know what that is. That's that small sports car. I've ridden one of those. They blast. They're fabulous little cars, and they get very, very good mileage, and they get good reports from Consumer Reports. They always get the best rating. You know, phenomenal little car, and a very good seller. Well, they provide people with something that they like. Now, what we would be doing is that we would be rewarding people who made bad decisions. Now, the people who made the bad decisions are also the people who have practiced the worst type of management. Folks, people ask me all the time, are you for labor, are you for management? I mean, that type of question. Please understand, that's not the right question. Well, I usually say I'm for labor, because if it wasn't for management, they wouldn't have a union. I shouldn't say that. They ask me if I'm for, you know, labor unions and stuff. And understand this, if in fact management treated their employees well, they wouldn't have a problem. We have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Thank you for calling in. My voice is giving out. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, Joe. This is Dan from Indiana, Southwest Indiana.
Dan, thank you so much for calling. Good morning to you.
I haven't called you in a while, and I am very, very glad to hear your voice, even though it's a little bit strained. I really, really hope you get to feeling better, Joe, because we miss the old Joe.
Thank you.
But I have to tell you that since the last time I called you, I'm not the same old Dan. I'm a different Dan. I've given up in one sense, but in another sense, I've given more faith. I guess I should say that my old faith used to be in teeny tiny little pieces of government, thinking, oh, well, NASA can put a spaceship up in the air without blowing it up most of the time. So I'm cool with this, and I'm cool with that. But since I've talked to you last, I've given up all faith in government. I am 100%, and I'm not talking about bomb-throwing anarchists or any crazy stuff like that. I'm talking about a 100% totally voluntary, put this in quote marks, society. I do not believe in the state that can do anything. And, sir, I wanted to pick your brain just a little bit to see just how comfortable, just how happy you would be if we had a society that had new government. And I'm talking about none at all.
Yeah.
That everything was privately owned. Everything was privately dealt with and stuff. Even our courts, even our legislature, everything. How comfortable would you be if we had a 100% society? Because I look up to you, Joe, and I think that you are one of the most brilliant minds on Blog Talk Radio. I'm serious. I listen to Teddy Fleck every once in a while, and they got a good show. But you're the man. You're the guy I look to on this Blog Talk Radio, which is basically inundated with your left and your right and kind of sort of folks in the middle. But you're the guy that I look up to and stuff. You're the guy that I respect his views. And not that I don't respect any of the other libertarians. There ain't that many. But in my opinion, you are heads and shoulders above the rest. So I am curious, sir, as how comfortable you would be with new state at all. Can you live with that? Can you be happier? At least, and I know that sounds like a long question there.
Okay.
But can you be happier with that as opposed to what we got right now?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you the first thing I'm going to do when we sign off. I'm going to tell my wife what you said. Well, thank you very much.
Your wife is married to a great guy.
Well, we have a lot of fun together. We really do. She's a wonderful person. And you actually gave me chills. I mean, I've never had such a fine compliment. I appreciate that very much, Dad. I'm almost embarrassed. But I would have no problem with a private government. Because our Constitution is, in fact, a private government. See, that's what it was intended to be. You see, just like Edmund Opitz said, no one can read our Constitution without concluding that the people who wrote it wanted their government severely limited. The words no and not employed in restraint of government power occur 24 times in the first 7 articles of the Constitution and 22 more times in the Bill of Rights. Basically, that's what our forefathers wanted. Now, it would be very, very difficult, I think, trying to have private governments because no one would know what the hell to do. I mean, there would be no centralized point. But if there's a centralized point actually elected by the people, for the people, for all the people, and they can have that agreement, you basically have a private government. And I agree with you. When we talk this way, people say, oh, you're an anarchist. There'll be... And the first thing that people think of when they think of anarchy is they think of people rioting in the streets. No, we should be rioting in the streets now against the government. We should be rioting in the streets now, and that would bring our government down, and that would be for the better of our society. But I agree that a totally private government would be the best. I think the problem we face is an actual execution, because everyone would be looking, well, we'll do this. Now, does this infringe upon the rights of another sovereign state? In other words, there'll always be this back and forth. There'll always be some sort of governing body, and it would be a private governing body saying, okay, we'll take us all together and make sure we disseminate it out. But what our forefathers did is they never intended our government to do anything. For example, in the Constitution, it says that the Congress must meet on the second December of every year, at least once a year. Because they never intended these guys to even get together. In other words, they intended to be a very, very private enterprise with the government. The federal government had no sovereignty. There was no sovereign federal government. There was only the sovereignty of the states. And people don't understand. They think the states are just there and the government owns the states. The states own the government, and people don't understand that. So, in effect, what you are suggesting and what you're hoping for is what our forefathers originally developed. This is the embryonic stage of everything that we have. Unfortunately, it gets out of hand. And that's always been the fear. That's why they say, you know, no, not in the Constitution constantly, but it's been ignored. I think if we had a totally private government, Dan, I think it would evolve the same way. Because people would be, look, there would be selfish people saying, look, I can provide you with something. Don't worry. I know how to, you know, there'll always be some shenanigans. There'll be people in power. And it may even be worse because there will be no one central party where we can say, hey, we have a constitution. Get the hell out. That's wrong. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked very well so far for us right now. But yes, I agree. But that's what we had. And that's what we should go back to.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, at least you've met me more than halfway on that, and I appreciate that.
Oh, no, I'm with you all the way. I'm not afraid of anarchy whatsoever. I mean, I think anarchy would create a tremendous amount of peace and prosperity in our country.
Yeah. I guess the folks that have a stake in government would want to equate a free society, the totally 100% voluntary society that I had mentioned to you, they would want to equate that with disorder and everything, but we got a whole bunch of more disorder right now going on, my friend. And I wanted to tell you that I borrowed something from you. I didn't borrow like any tools or anything, so you don't have to worry about it in your garage. You're in Tulsa, okay. I'm here in Indiana. But one thing that you said that I thought was really, really cool, and you kind of went on about that more than once, was about the president when he'd sit out in front of that he had the easiest gig in the world.
Absolute easiest job in the world, right.
And I put a comment here with a link to the article. It's on NolanChart.com, and if you care to read it, it's down there below where it says comments and everything. Basically, it's called Powers of the President of a New Republic. That the guy would be like a governor of a state. You know, the state that had bloodlessly cut loose from the United States government and everything. And what kind of gig he would have and stuff, and I thought you might be at least amused by it and everything. But I was really inspired by your talk about that and everything. I thought, oh man, I got to go somewhere with this. And I got some good responses and stuff to the thing. And it's like, oh yeah, can I vote? Will you vote for me and stuff? I'd love to be president of that particular republic.
Right. Dan, I hate to Dan. I'm sorry, but I have 30 seconds before we go off the air.
Okay,
I'm sorry, and I didn't want you to continue, and then all of a sudden we go blank, and then you thought I hang up on you, okay?
Thank you for having me on, Joe.
Thank you so much for calling. You saved my voice. I owe you big time. If you don't have one of my coffee mugs or T-shirts, send me your mailing address and T-shirt size, and I'll send you one, okay?
All right. I'm a pretty big guy. You got a 4X?
All right, I'll get a 4X for you, fine, okay? I will get one for
you. Oh, thank you so much,
all
Joe.
Right. Dan,
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranchakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. You now have a control ride that isn't any more fun. Ron Paul has a sign that says, don't steal, the government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.